Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And you just were wrist deep in a chicken.
I was.
A dead chicken.
Well, I would hope so at that point. Butterflied it. Don't know if I did the greatest job, but it is flatter, so it should cook evenly in the oven. And you got some potatoes ready to roast. I thought they were quartered, but we are just baking them with the herby butter from the chicken to put on top when they are done.
Yeah. Should be a good dinner after this.
Yeah.
Or supper, if you're supper. In the Midwest.
It's true.
It's about to rain, which we need.
Yeah, nothing's up in the garden yet.
Yeah, it's real sad. And I feel one of the three ramps, I looked under the tree and it's not there.
Like the squirrel dug it up again?
Maybe. And one of the other ones is looking real sad.
Oh. Do we need to water them in with a watering can since it's under the tree?
We did.
Do we need to water it again?
No, probably.
I also may take the chicken wire from the shed. And if I get some good steaks, then I can use them for all the natives I'm putting in front of the house.
Oh, yeah.
I worry about the gentian and the angelica.
Oh, the squirrels.
Yeah, and there's a wild rabbit. And I don't think that they would like those, but just to be on the safe side.
You never know.
And they're expensive enough to get live plants. You don't really want to be like, we do not make enough money to be frivolous with what we spend
money
on.
Absolutely not. Although that reminds me, I still have a gift card from the holiday season to something my boss sent me. It's in my inbox.
Oh.
I don't know what it is. It's something we've never used before, but I'm sure it's plant related.
Okay. So we also have a gift card from when we got married.
Oh.
From my cousins.
Oh,
a very fancy restaurant in Northeast.
We should, if we want to go there, we have to make a reservation.
We do.
Maybe we should do that after this.
Yeah.
Mental note, we're looking through a cookbook to develop a shopping list so we can go to a Korean market and some reservations.
Yes. And I need to get my glove compartment fixed and a tire patched. So.
Adulting.
Adulting seems to never end.
I know. But you know what's better than adulting? Talking about comics.
Oh.
We're doing four issues.
You could say we are investigating in an X Factor Files way.
Yes.
These four issues of Alpha Flight.
Yeah. So we're doing four issues. The next episode will be two Alpha Flight and an Avengers issue. Like it's a big, long arc.
Yeah.
That we're doing. So it all makes sense. It just is a lot of Matt Loder read, like, he's very wordy, not as bad as Claremont, but there are still a lot of words on those pages.
Yeah, so hopefully we will do a good job of finding the exact quotes we need at first glance.
Yeah, so first up we have issue 35 entitled "The Child is Father to the Man" from June 1986. Bill Mantlo's our writer. Our penciler, new to the book, is David Ross, and he's a Canadian.
Yeah, Canada's own.
Jerry Talawak is our anchor. Coloring is Bob Sharon. Letterer, Jim Novak. Editor is Carl Potts. So, first, we have Marina in a holding tank aboard a Tuma ship, clutches at her stomach in pain. So we've seen this before. It's how she got captured. She had some cramping. She was captured. A Tuma, looking on, reflects on the circumstances surrounding Namor's abdication and his own seizing of power in Atlantis.
But can we talk about Lord Dara?
Is he hot?
Yes.
Oh, show me.
It's an oh no, he's hot moment.
Oh, he is.
And Marina gets progressively less monstrous throughout this arc.
Yeah.
And she gets bits and pieces throughout all of them.
Yeah. So the scheme to capture her is just a ploy by Atuma.
Yeah.
This is his game to lure Namor in for battle.
Do we know why he's like... Namor's gone. Why does he need... Oh, to cement his rule, he needs to fully discredit Namor.
I think so, yeah.
That's the only way that this would make sense.
Yeah. Heather and Puck are closing in on Mansion Alpha?
Is that what we're calling it?
I think it's officially Mansion Alpha. Or I put in here...
Alpha House?
On the Alpha Mansion. I think it's... It's later on we get a Maison. But that's not this one.
Do they move to Quebec?
Oddly, no.
No, it's a Maison.
Maison Alpha is either when they're in Edmonton or Winnipeg. Either one does not make sense.
No.
I think it's Edmonton. So they have to take some time So Puck won't freeze while she's flying back from New York with him.
She does some barrel rolls with him, yep. And he's like, I'm about to lose my lunch.
And he's like, please don't burn me up.
Yeah.
So they have a conversation along the way where she's more confident as a leader now, not only behind the scenes, but also in battle. She's sort of proven herself with Lady Deathstrike, sort of.
Sorry, yes.
And further, she's not interested in a more personal relationship with him. She's like, I am, you know, getting real good at this leadership thing. But also, by the way, we're not going to date.
Yeah.
And he's like, I guess I'll have to think about that. And she wrestles with the idea that Mac may have done some terrible things to Logan as part of the Department H stuff.
Yes. It's like a...
So
a lot of introspection, a lot of thought bubbles.
They're getting closer to the mansion and Puck is like, I got it from here, babe, and tumbles on, not wanting to be seen as helplessly needing her assistance from someone back on the ground.
But also, like, if you know that they just flew in, of course he's being carried by her.
Yeah.
Like, he can't fly on his own. Like, it's fine, Puck.
Upon entering the mansion, both Heather and Puck greet Doug Thompson, who gives background on his marriage to Snowbird. It was a quiet ceremony the previous week, and her current illness. They join the rest of the team in time to witness Snowbird's out-of-control powers as she pleads for Shaman's help. Yeah. As Snowbird transforms into a polar bear, Puck tackles Heather out of the way, and the team sedates Snowbird once again.
There's some great commentary from North Star. He's like, ah, so our Mother Superior returns. And Madison Jeffries says, so you can be snotty even in French, huh, North Star? And he says, especially in French, Mr. Jeffries. Just really laying into the, he's sort of a jerk.
Yeah. Shaman is walking in the Barren Grounds, which is an actual place, following Inuit cairns made to look like men to an uncertain test awaiting him. The spirits of the land test him through a phantom caribou herd, a cloud of mosquitoes, a giant fish, and a drop off a cliff while he was in the belly of the fish.
Yes, like some of the spirits are there to help him on his journey. Some are meant to test him. So the caribou stampede is a test and he leaps over a cliff. And
he cuts himself out.
Cuts himself out?
Of the fish.
Oh, I'm not there yet.
Oh, sorry.
Then the caribou vanish. So then the mosquito spirits are there, drawing real blood. And the lake is there to help him. And he sort of reflects on all these things. The fish is there to protect him from the falls, because once they go over the falls, like, the fish is kaput, but he is cushioned. And then there's wolves that he has to battle off. And torn and bloodied, Shaman finds a cairn that is a shelter from the storm.
It's hollowed out, and he's like, I can go in here. Inside the cairn, he finds a very unsympathetic talisman waiting for him.
Yeah, she is real harsh.
She's reflecting on how he's failed as a father a lot.
I mean, it's been in big ways for her in her life.
Oh, absolutely. And she tosses two things at his feet.
Some robes and a new staff.
Yeah, so it's a caribou robe and a staff, and then his grandfather appears and gives him a third item, an eagle crest for his head. So these were left in this cairn by the Vikings who stole them from his tribe generations ago.
And now he has to defeat those skeletons.
It's skeleton warriors. It's 90s skeleton warriors.
What?
Is it a cartoon?
I don't remember that.
Oh, on Saturday mornings.
Oh.
They had a great theme song.
Anyway.
So his powers are now coming from within. He has found a way to not need his medicine pouch.
He can implore the spirits. They don't have to obey. Like, there's a very big distinction that's made there of what he can and cannot do.
Yes.
Versus what talisman can do. Like, they must obey her.
His familiar, named Eaglet.
That comes from his helmet.
From the helm. And it serves as his intermediary between the spirits and Shaman. So yes. He's like, I can help you. After besting the skeletons, Shaman transports to the mansion where Aurora was just wondering where he could be.
And it ends with, Shaman has come. Now, fellow elfin, stand aside and let me examine my patient. Because Snowbird is like a griffin creature.
Mm-hmm.
Like wolf head, eagle arms. I think there might be lion claws down below.
Mm.
So I'm curious as to how the Vikings, I'm presuming, because it mentions the aggression between the Sarsi and the Inuit, but also these are Viking skeletons, which was like Labrador.
Yeah.
On the Atlantic coast.
How'd they get to the West Coast?
So how did they get to the West Coast? And the book that's referenced, The People of the Deer, like, I hope that's an indigenous author and not just like some white person talking about indigenous cultures without talking with indigenous cultures.
Mm. Star Trek Voyager, we see you.
But I did appreciate the description of the Canadian Shield in geologic terms. Like, that jives with the stuff I've seen about it and how it was just like some of the oldest bedrock on the planet that's exposed. It got scraped clean and scraped and scraped again, which is why there's not a whole lot of topsoil there. And it forms like this big sort of antler shape across Canada, which is why the population in Canada is not there.
Oh.
Like, smaller groups can live there, but like all the big cities are in the south. So that's the issue. A lot of bitchiness by North Star, which generally I'm here for, but I would not like to be on the receiving end of it. And good for Aurora, like, for sort of taking more of a active role. She's not just lurking in the background like Madison Jeffries.
So this sets us up. So we have Doug Thompson.
Yeah.
Which
he sort of loses his luster in this next issue.
Yeah, he does. So
are all the credits the same?
I believe they are.
Writer, Bill Mantlo. Penciler, David Ross. Inker, Jerry Talawak. Letterer, Joe Rosen. And colorist, Bob Sharon. Carl Potts, editor.
Yes. So
we do not also...
Letterer is different. Jim Novak was previous, so this is Joe Rosen.
Gotcha.
And this one, we did, I promise last time that we'd be reading a little Marvel Comics Present story. We can just read it for the next episode.
Oh, okay.
Because it's 8 pages. But it fits somewhere in between here, you know.
Cool. So Snowbird is now an owl and she's hunting a rabbit, which we do not appreciate at all.
No.
Especially because, well, it doesn't end well for the rabbit, but it also doesn't end well for Snowbird.
No, because then she just barfs it all up.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm hungering for blood, but my stomach can't handle it.
Yeah. And Doug Thompson is like, who is this person using non-Western medicine to treat my goddess wife? Like,
confirmed, this is Mansion Alpha. Oh. I got it right in this issue write up.
Oh, okay. And is this happening in the middle of the night because Puck is just in his underwear, as is Aurora, and are you going to cosplay as Heather in this green nightgown with like a big pink teddy bear on it?
That'd be fun.
It's serving Easter colors. It looks like the teddy bear looks like a peep.
Yum. So finally, Shaman has enough of Doug Thompson's bullshit. And he's like, you know what? Your wife is fucking pregnant. She's going to give birth like in the next half hour. And you've been married for 2 weeks. What do you think about that? How about them apples?
Without medical precedent, I can only presume that these symptoms are normal for a goddess who's having a baby. Like, it's in bold. Like, hello, she's a goddess.
In New York, Bera of Atlantis is making his way to the Avengers compound because at this time, the Avengers compound was floating. It's like a big raft.
Oh, and
it sinks later.
And there's like, I should not be surprised by that, but there's like a Submariner pit, I guess, for Namor, since he's an Avenger now. And he gets his way in, like,
yeah. Beer's like, hey, I need your help. He zaps his way through an underwire door and then he surfaces in the loading dock area, and Black Knight, Hercules, and Namor are all there.
He has a moment with Black Knight and they're like, okay, I respect you.
Yeah.
And Vera apparently has not been a great person to Namor in the past.
After Namor smashes him into some crates,
yeah,
Vera pleads for help in retaking Atlantis despite the differences between the two of them.
There was a lot of exposition on why he has the little saltwater mask, because there used to be a pill, but then it turns you pink and it's sort of cancerous and carcinogenic. Like, I was not expecting that in an explanation for why he needs the little saltwater mask.
So Namor is like, I'll agree to do this, but only because of Marina.
And he doesn't take Black Knight and Hercules with, like, Hercules is already in his swim trunks.
Yeah.
He is and his ready harness. To go. Yes. This is the best Hercules.
It is. So Atuma is using Marina to prove to all the Atlanteans that all Namor cares about is this alien woman in the surface world. And it's a ploy.
And the alien, like, you couldn't stand to have this alien woman as your queen.
Yes, and it's widely known in Atlantis. Namor is an Avenger now.
Working with the surface world.
So later, outside the mansion, Puck meets with Doug Thompson and lets him know Snowbird is resting inside. Puck then tells Doug about the circumstances surrounding Narya's birth.
And that shaman had a role in it.
Yeah. Doug thinks he may have been tricked by her so she would have a baby and be further tied to the earth and avoid going to the gods, who he thinks wants her back now that her task of defeating the great beast is complete. Doug is incredibly angry and tells Puck that all he wants is his wife back before storming back inside.
He is a great big jerk. He even calls Puck a midget, which is not a thing that you should ever do to another person.
No, that's rude. Shaman, thinking the birth of Snowbird's child will be like her own, goes with Heather into a side room to contemplate where she should give birth.
We should say that Madison Jeffries took a schematic for a sonogram right out of Box's head and made it happen.
Yeah.
Like, they seem to be a good team and good for each other. And this is like, hey, do your abilities work like this? Let's try it. And I thought that was a really cool moment.
Yeah. Shaman calls upon the house spirits and asks them if it's safe for Snowbird to give birth there. And they say the house is not the place for the child's birth.
Yeah.
He then uses Eaglet, the familiar from his headpiece, to call upon Narya's mother, grandfather, and another god, you know, round it out, to ask them, and they reject her, saying she made the decision to stay grounded in the mortal realm, and they don't respect that.
No, Snowbird has rejected us, Shaman, turned her back upon her heritage and chosen a mortal with whom to mate. And Shaman's like, as did you. And she's like, I did it for a reason.
So then he has to try again. So it's his third try to find a place for her to, like, pop out this kid. And he calls the astral form of Doctor Strange to ask his opinion. Don't use a phone.
just summon the astral form of Doctor Strange in his, like, tights?
Yes. So
he is, like, very acrobatic floating around here.
Calling upon the powers of the wind, Shaman and Heather journey with Strange's form far north to a place of power near to where Snowbird herself was born. They return back to the mansion, and Strange's astral form departs.
Just in time for a confrontation with Doug Thompson, who's trying to take Snowbird away, and she's looking rough.
Northstar he plays his only part by rushing into the house, and he's like, yo, get down to the docks. And
Aurora has a more active role. She takes the gun from Doug Thompson.
Yes. She's like, absolutely not. Snowbird says she trusts Shaman and wants to go to the place of power to give birth. Everyone piles into the Alpha Omnijet to journey to Beachy Island, where a terrible creature is locked beneath the surface and seems eager for the arrival of the team.
There's pallor. There's no lips, just lots of teeth. Too long have I lain in the icy embrace of the earth. Soon shall death release me and pestilence live again. Womp womp.
No letters page this issue either. So what? Jam-packed action. Doug Thompson taking a turn. What an asshole.
Yes. Yes. Although he's going to have competition for biggest asshole by the end of these issues.
You married a goddess. You married a goddess.
Like, that was a choice. And with it, like, maybe adjust your expectations.
Yeah. She is advanced pregnancy. Is it yours? We don't know. She's still 6 years old.
Yes. Yeah. It's a whole thing.
Issue 37, Death Birth, which is sort of a play on the X-Men issue title, Life Death.
I think so.
This is now Death Birth.
Yes.
August 1986, Bill Mantlo, David Ross, Jerry Talawak, Bob Sharon, Jim Novak, and Carl Potts.
Is it 1986 or is it 1848?
Did you love this? Okay, the last time we had a villain flashback, it was Gilded Lily, and I could eat that shit with a spoon. It's so good.
And now it was, and Gilded Lily is just great.
Yes. You're going to see her in like another two episodes.
You're not supposed to. You were all like mysterious. Like, oh, is she gone? I don't know.
You're going to see some form of Gilded Lily. Like,
does she have a mask or is she all like,
you'll have to see. I'm not going to ruin anything, but. So the issue opens with a recounting of the adventures of Captain F.R. Crozier, a physician and officer in the 1848 Franklin expedition looking for the Northwest Passage.
They didn't find it.
This is a real thing, right?
I was like actually going to ask you that. I know Shackleton is famous.
Right.
But wasn't he the Antarctic? Or was he the Arctic? Like, it was a thing. People would search for this Northwest Passage. Their ships would get stuck in the ice, and then they all died of scurvy.
This is a thing. Okay. So this is an AI overview. Let's go to the real article.
True. We don't like AI.
Franklin's Lost Expedition was a failed British voyage of Arctic exploration led by Captain Sir John Franklin that departed England in 1845 aboard two ships, the HMS Erebus and the HMS Terror. In retrospect, maybe one of those ship names.
Well, Erebus is like underworldy.
So they chose Terror and Hell.
Basically.
Okay. So everyone was lost. Oh. In 1848, so that's accurate.
So the ships are still frozen. They cannot move. It's April. They keep hoping for spring, but one party that went out for supplies never came back. So at the end of April 1848, he leads the remaining crews out, and cold seems to clutch at the sealskin soles of our bursting boots, causing the men to stumble. Some who fall never rise again. Some who sleep never wake. The dead go unburied. Civilization, we believe, lies some 600 miles to the south. We dare not stop.
Do you want some more facts?
Yes, once we get past this scout who actually is frozen in place. Like, frozen solid. For all eternity.
Yes. Are you ready for the facts now?
I am.
The Erebus was not discovered until 2014.
Really?
Yeah. So at the time that this was written, it was just like, everything disappeared.
Did they ever find the Terror?
2016.
I'm guessing at the bottom of the ocean.
They found the wreck of the Terror south of King William Island in the body of water named Terror Bay.
Oh.
So it is now a National Historic Site called the Wrecks of the HMS Erebus and HMS Terror National Historic Site. And you can go there, and research and dive expeditions now happen annually.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So
Crozier is like, shit's not looking great.
No. I am without hope that daybreak will deliver those of us who are left with death. The ice will claim our corpses.
So he has a little tonic.
I am determined it shall not steal my soul. I am a doctor, a man of science. While aboard ship, I prepared an elixir to slow my bodily functions to a death-like state where I need neither food nor drink. Appearing dead, it's my hope... Or was? I feel like it should be is. My hope that my men would leave me for dead, my body preserved by the very ice that would doom them until the spring sun should warm my blood and revive me.
So he glug-glugs.
He betrays the crews, the people that he is supposed to be leading, and it backfires because they bury him.
They respect him so much that they bury him.
And womp womp, bury me so deep that no spring thaw could ever warm my blood, so deep that no summer sun could ever counteract the effects of my elixir, so deep that body and soul I would lie for all eternity screaming out against the accursed embrace of the ice. And his journal sort of ripping apart in the north wind.
In the Alpha Omnijet, which is being... Oh, what?
Aurora.
It's... What?
Oh, just the fact that she's macking on Box. She has a new outfit she wants to show off.
She gives Roger a kiss.
She does.
Before flirting with him even more blatantly.
And Heather's like, no longer in mourning for Lankowski, Aurora? And she's like, I will never forget my beloved Walter, ever. But memories cannot keep one warm at night. Aurora needs someone.
A girl's got to eat.
I'm like, girl, be good on your own before you can be good with someone else.
Anyway. So spirits are guiding them to where they need to go. So they're following the spirits.
It's true. They have to set their gyros to them.
Yeah. So Talisman appears before the jet, calling herself the Binder of Spirits. She comes aboard and recriminates her father for having her take on the mantle of Talisman, which has removed her humanity.
Which, did we know that before? I thought she was just like angsty, and she felt very human when she was with Heather with the whole like Dark Guardian situation.
Yes, this is a twist.
Yeah.
She informs Shaman she has joined up with the team so she can watch him fail. You know, this is boding real well.
Right?
After the jet lands, Talisman summons an airbed upon which Snowbird is laid.
She does it in such a catty way of like, come on, Shaman, you can't even put her on something comfortable. Here, let me show you how to
do it. Here you go, fatty, give birth on this. Like, Northstar and Aurora are flying above to keep any bad actors at bay.
And Puck is in the Omnijet. Like, Heather is not taking chances. Like, and everyone is sort of saying, like, I've got a bad feeling about this.
And directly below where the airbed is, Crozier senses living beings above him, and he stirs.
Yeah.
He can feel Talisman's hate as she again lectures her father, and it feeds into him.
I will steal their life and have revenge for all the years they had life while I was trapped.
As Snowbird nears her time to give birth, her mother, grandfather, and the third god appear and offer a place with them one last time, but she must give up her child and husband. She's like, no thanks, and they peace out.
He does get a name this time. It's Turok, the Shaper.
I am just not investing time into introducing yet another character title.
Because it was not name, or he didn't have a name in the first one, like, pointedly was nameless.
So, after they peace out, a great green power shoots out of Snowbird, which Shaman identifies as the baby's life force manifesting itself. This draws Crozier like a magnet, and he says that today he will be reborn.
I sense life coming into existence above me, a spirit seeking solidity, needing to be bound to the land to take form. Why did they bring the mother here to this place which my heat corrupted long, long ago? What care I that they are here? Their mistake is my salvation.
As Shaman performs his part in bringing the baby into the world, Talisman reveals she set him up. This is a great power, but also great evil.
I get you up, old man. The spirits led you to this spot only because I commanded it. It is a place of power, true, but it is also a place of death. And these big leeches show up?
She manipulated the spirits into showing the team this location so she could prove to her father that he can fail in what he thinks he does best.
Ugh.
Then these black leechy things come out of the ground near Snowbird as she cries out for her baby.
Northstar landed, except now he's stuck in muck. Aurora was like, I can't help you because then I won't be able to fly, but I will do something about these tentacles.
But then she's covered in maggots.
Like her arm is. I didn't realize that then, like, her entirety is, even though she's glowing. Box gets super rusty, so he can't even move. And Heather is beset with flies.
Yeah, so gross. Puck, he leaves the Omnijet, has the ice broken beneath him, and he sinks into the frigid water.
Yes.
The baby forms and rapidly transitions into Crozier, who introduces himself as Pestilence.
I live, and upon the living I shall bring plague.
He's so angry.
He is such a dick. Somehow he has the baby's life force within him.
Yes, like the baby is within him as old-timey 1848 guy who chugs tonic.
Yes, like he's got that awful, like, the front part of his head is bald, but then he's got, like, the long hair.
I have a great commission of this by Mark Stegbauer. Mark Stegbauer did a fantastically disgusting job on my Pestilence commission.
He does good stuff. I have a bunch of his prints in the hallway at my place, including,
well, not even prints, like originals.
Oh yeah, that I have art by him.
Yes,
that he had done.
You have Rawhide Kid
is awesome.
Yep.
Enchantress, superb. I'm excited. Well, if we have a special guest during Uncanny, I hope that they appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I got you a flame
Human Torch.
Yes, I was going to say Flaming Torch, but that doesn't make any sense.
He's gay. Is he?
Only.
That needs to come out because I had a big plan to redo Alpha Flight art. I think I'm going to do it over there. I'm gesturing to the darkest part of the living room where natural light rarely touches.
Oh.
To put it.
To protect the cells.
Yeah.
Or the
pages.
Yeah.
And then put some of that stuff over on that. Like, do a refresh, rotate some art.
When we have our super intense conversation about moving in, we'll have to talk about wall space.
It won't be that intense. It's just planning.
It's going to be a lot of steps.
Yes. But don't worry, we have plenty of walls.
Yes.
We'll have even more in the basement by that time.
Maybe. You know who also has walls between her and her feelings? Talisman.
Because
she's such a jerk.
So,
and like, this is you had a good relationship with Snowbird. Like, they were friends and friendly. And now she's just like, sacrificed the unborn child of Snowbird.
So the baby is going to be consumed pretty soon because Pestilence is going to kill it with his own evil.
Yeah.
So Shaman moves to use his power against Pestilence, but he's transformed into a like super ancient man.
Yeah. Aged can hold his staff.
So Talisman is like, well, job's done here, so I can just do away with Pestilence. And
now that my father has suffered for all the wrongs he's done me, he now knows that his power is not even enough to save himself, let alone others. I tricked Shaman into letting loose Pestilence, that I could step in and save him as he failed to save my mother from death or myself from inhumanity. By destroying you, I will destroy my father's pride.
And then Pestilence is like, fuck that. And he rips the coronet from her brow. And throws it to the side, and he starts choking her.
Causes great pain. Like, I thought it was impossible to remove the coronet.
Right.
Well, but since he's undead, he's not really a spirit, so he can't be commanded.
Shaman sees the pretty tiara on the ground and considers putting it on, but knows it will come at the cost of his humanity.
And he's like, I need a moment.
Then in Atlantis, Atuma gloats in front of a tank holding Marina, but his plan is going exactly how he wanted it to, luring Namor back for revenge. Namor is close to the palace and is angry.
Because, well, he's always angry, but also, like, what a dink. Like, don't be a nincompoop. You should have brought your friends with.
Yeah, so my analysis is, like, I knew Talisman was angry. She's been mad at her dad for a while.
And she's been absent, like, taking time. I thought that she was, like, just getting some separation and some healthy boundary things happening. Yeah. Like, this just takes the cake.
She came up with a very intricate, cruel, and borderline evil plan.
I would say evil.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you need a place of power to birth your kid, Snowbird, my friend? Here's a place that's totally evil.
Yeah.
Like, girl.
Yeah.
Come on.
Issue 8, entitled Pestilence.
You mean 38?
Did I say 28?
You said 8.
It's 8. Issue 38. Pestilence! !! From September 1986. Namor is moving on Atlantis with Beera in tow. As Atuma's forces attack him, he reflects that all he wants is to save Marina, as the Atlanteans have turned on him due to his love for her and his abysmal government of the kingdom.
Yeah.
He's
good at his job.
To drive this point home, Atuma uses Marina to rile up the Atlantean forces against their former ruler.
And they kick his ass.
Seeing that they cannot win against such overwhelming odds, Namor and Beera withdraw.
Like, what a dick.
We're back at Peachy Island, and it's not so peachy. So the team is where we last left them.
Talisman is getting choked out. Somehow she got mud all over her face. From the coronet being taken off of her head.
Where's the blood?
Like, when you said that during the uncanny experience and your Alpha Flight class, I'm like, did it like rip the flesh off of her skull? Like, it seems like it was supposed to.
Yeah. So everyone is still dealing with their own things, like Heather with the flies.
Aurora is still covered in maggots.
Shaman reflects on his failure to do anything to help and debates taking on the mantle of Talisman. As he gets to the discarded coronet, Heather breaks free of the flies and zooms towards Pestilence, who takes on the form of Mac to confuse her.
And she's like, joke's on you. I'm going to kick Mac in the face.
I've been waiting for this because I think he did Logan dirty. the other member of our thruple.
And I love this moment of like, Pestilence is intimate with death. Somehow he knows how my husband died and that I may have been responsible. He's trying to make me feel so guilty that I'll be paralyzed by remorse to defend myself. But despite all the unsavory things I've learned about Max since his death, I did, and I do love him. And to borrow a cliche, love is never having to say, I'm sorry, after he, like, double fist punches him in the face. And she's like, oh, that felt good.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth sort of has a reconciliation with her dad just before Puck bursts up through the ice and drags Pestilence down into the icy waters.
Yeah. Like, good for Heather for grabbing Puck before hypothermia kicks in. And between the two of... So this is a very handy thing. I feel like in X-Men, the original animated series, we got this in the battle with X-Factor, where like each person couldn't win against their X-Factor counterpart, so they changed partners.
Yeah.
So by rescuing Puck, Heather is then able to rescue Northstar. Northstar is able to create a whirlwind around Aurora, freeing her from all the maggots.
Whirlwind. It's a storm power.
Yes. And then Aurora is able to glow bright enough to get the evil leeches away from Box that were going to eat him.
Because he was all rusty. And the leeches were like, we can have a feast.
I always want it to be plants to have the better name, but it's for creatures. It is negative phototaxis. It's like when you move away from light. And it'll be positive if you move towards it. And if you're a plant, then it's tropism. So like when my parsley right now is getting real leggy because it's in the kitchen window, that is positive phototropism. Fun facts of the day.
Pestilence bursts out. He's back, baby. And Snowbird assumes the white Sasquatch form to battle him.
She's pissed.
However, you know who comes back?
The great beast.
All these fucking great beasts.
I thought they were dead.
I thought they were dead. Remember when we were in that black and white realm like 10 issues ago?
Where they defeated
them again. This is the third time the great beasts are around.
And now there's another shaper, but this one is the Soman. And Pestilence is just being a jerk.
So
and mother with air quotes.
The shaman throws that coronet on his head and becomes the new talisman. Much to Elizabeth's sadness, due to his loss of humanity just when they had repaired their relationship.
Did they repair their relationship? She just said, I'm so sorry.
And I think to her, that repaired it. Shaman.
Is it, like, their spirits, therefore I can command them.
He sends them away. He's like, go away. And they're like, oh, all right. Sold.
Yeah, and Pestilence doesn't really care. They were merely agents of destruction, whereas I am death, decay, and devastation incarnate. And
so he's like, oh shit, I might get beat here. And he just tunnels into the earth and closes the passage behind him.
Yeah, he tries to transform into the baby because...
It's creepy. This is so creepy.
This is bad on so many levels. So in the same way that... Because he is now talisman, the binder spirits, he can command Snowbird, who is in the Sasquatch form, because the Sasquatch form is one of the great spirits.
Yes.
And then Pestilence turns into the baby and is like, oh, but I'm a baby.
You can't do anything to me.
And Shaman still has Snowbird, like, rip him to shreds, or try to. And it doesn't work, and then Pestilence runs away.
Yes. So what...
And Snowbird and Doug are left.
Yeah, so Snowbird turns back into her human form, bemoans the fate of her now dead child, and Doug Thompson.
It's like, we'll find him somehow, I swear.
We'll get our baby back.
I don't think they can.
Shaman says he will use spears to track Pestilence and he will be destroyed. When Snowbird asks if he means the evil being or her baby, Shaman responds and says he will destroy whatever needs to be destroyed.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Beera shows up at Alpha Mansion as the Omni ship arrives because Namor needs help. And so he's going to get Marina's teammates. I keep wanting to call her Marina.
I know, because it feels like it should be, but it's
Marina.
Yeah. So we actually have a letters page. Lots of positive letters were sent by readers about the Puck story in issue 32.
Oh, good.
David Lagasa of Alexandria, Virginia, seemed blown away by the fantastic backstory of Eugene Judd, and a writer signing himself as the Elfin even congratulates Mantlow for writing a story about Puck. In editorial response to Jim Cunningham of Edmonds, Washington, letter explains that Puck's painful condition being something apart from a solely medical explanation was seeded in the X-Men Alpha Flight series penned by Chris Claremont and was an intentional insertion. Mm-hmm. So this sort of, this goes back, Byrne did an interview sometime, like a year or two after this, where he's like, Puck's condition was solely supposed to be a disability.
Oh, really?
It was never supposed to be. And then Mantlow mucked it all up with magic, basically, is what he said. And editorial being like, no, Claremont actually wrote this during the Byrne run. Maybe Byrne just didn't pay attention.
Oh.
Did he not read X-Men Alpha Flight? It's possible he didn't. So we see things going on here. Baby/Pestilence is in the ground somewhere, so the team needs to track it down. At the same time, we have Atlanta shenanigans.
We do.
Happening.
Poor Marina.
Yeah, Marina not having a great time being a pawn.
Feels good.
Yeah, so it's super unfortunate. And that's where we leave off.
Yeah.
So next,
I'm excited to read the next issues because I'm like, but Snowbird's baby.
Yes.
Like, why is Snowbird being done so dirty?
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Yeah. So it's tight storytelling. It's really fun to see how Mantlow has constructed everything. And it's two bigger storylines going at the same time.
Yeah.
And it makes me think that Mantlow at some point in one of the interviews I read said that he was planning a graphic novel with Dave Ross.
Oh.
All about Marino. So I'm wondering if it was canceled and he's weaving it in.
Oh, since he already had it constructed.
Yep.
And like, does this jive with the Avenger stuff at the time?
Yeah.
Do we need to ask Avenging Hour?
Well, to promote my book, I will actually be on the Avenging Hour to talk about these issues with them.
Oh.
Leading up to Avengers 272.
Are you gonna write it down so you remember? I want to know.
We can ask.
Okay.
But yeah, this is going along with what's happening. Namor is part of the Avengers. He sort of doesn't fit in. He doesn't want to really be there, but he has nowhere else to be.
What? Namor's not a team player? Yeah. I'm so surprised.
Yeah. So this is very much in line with what's happening in that title. It's a natural dovetailing of storytelling.
Gotcha.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
Well, let us know what you think of all this is everything happening. Do you like that Snowbird's baby is now inside a 150-year-old zombie?
Oh.
What do you think about Talisman? And by that, which one are you talking about? Because now we have two, which makes writing so confusing.
Oh, yeah.
And
she was... Elizabeth had the coronet for just 19 issues.
Yeah. And then...
And now it's gone.
And what does that mean for her?
Yeah.
Because she's just a regular 19-year-old again. Who maybe is missing some flesh on her forehead.
Do you go back to being a college student on archaeological digs now?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well, I do know because I know where she goes, but...
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, did you... Yes.
Yeah, so that's it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. We start our coverage of Star Trek Voyager with our next episode and then come back here in 2 weeks for the continuation of this Alpha Flight arc.
Be well.
Bye.